Thanks. Hey, everybody. I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Kat, for inviting me to speak. So Kat's my my sponsor. And I have, next week, I'll have 7 months in sobriety, but I started coming to meetings in May of last year. So this is actually my first time sharing my story with you guys. So I'm pretty nervous, but hopefully you'll all just kind of bear with me as I try to share that, share what I've been through. So I'll just go with the prompt of like what it was like, what happened and what it's like now. And you know, I thought that that more about alcoholism was a really appropriate way to kind of like open the meeting for my story, because I read it before, but just hearing it now as I've been like reflecting on my story today, I'm like, that is just so totally me. And I guess I'll just start by saying alcoholism is a disease that has affected my life since I was born. So my dad is an alcoholic. I've heard that a lot in AA. I grew up in an alcoholic household. But for me, that didn't really result in me drinking early on. So I actually really hated alcohol when I was a teenager. So when I was in high school and even like my first year of college, I like refused to go to parties and drink because I just I'd seen a lot of arguments in my family about it. I hadn't really been able to invite my house when I was younger because of my dad's drinking. So it had just caused a lot of stress for me my whole life. But then when I got to college and after the first year, you know, I wasn't really making friends the way that I wanted to make friends. And I wasn't able to kind of like participate in all of the social aspects of college the way that I wanted. And I had a job at Cold Stone Creamery scooping ice cream, which isn't really important. But I decided I would drink at a party that we had for like for everybody who worked there. And even though I had like really hated alcohol before, from the first time I tried it, it was something that I absolutely loved. So even the first time I drank at that party, I got blackout drunk. People would tell stories about like Lisa was like crossing the room to drink directly out of a vodka bottle, like the first time she ever tried alcohol. And you would think that that would have been like a warning sign to me, or like something that I would have thought, you know, maybe this isn't something I should keep doing. But the fact is that it wasn't, because for a while I thought it was really fun. Like a lot of people, I was shy, and alcohol gave me a way to like interact with people in a way that I hadn't really experienced before. And it also helped me deal with like some emotional issues that I had that were related to things that happened in my family or things that happened in relationships while I was in college. And I think you'll hear a lot of people say that, you know, I was in college and I just drank like other people in college. Everybody drank in college. But for me, it was kind of like everybody drank, but you could always tell that I was kind of different because I blacked out every time. So there was a lot of, but you know, it wasn't so bad. A lot of my friends were also drunk too. And I was just the most drunk, and people thought that was kind of funny for a while. Yeah, I would have like terrible hangovers on the weekends. I kept it to the weekends because it was because of how destructive it was for me. And I kept it to the weekends and was able to kind of like finish college and actually like went to grad school and finished that. But all the whole time, like just like more about alcoholism said, my disease just got kind of like progressively worse. So when I got to grad school, things got like way more stressful for me, and I started drinking a lot more with a lot more negative consequences. I'm only 5 minutes. Okay. Even though I didn't have a lot of, I guess what I'll just say is I started going out every weekend and trying to prove to myself and other people that I was like a normal drinker. And it didn't work. And I did a lot of things that were like embarrassing. And I felt a lot of alienation from other people. I didn't have a lot of friends. People wouldn't invite me out. It just started started to a very isolating and shameful experience for me, where I had kind of like constant embarrassment from waking up and realizing things that had happened the night before. And I started to feel like I had to numb myself and really separate myself from my actions and behaviors so that I could just kind of live with myself. I really hated who I was, and I had this constant fear that people would find out, that people would like see the difference between me and like who I tried to make people think I was. And it went like that for, I'll just say it went like that for years. I knew that I had a problem, and I tried a lot of other ways to solve it before I tried AA. I tried therapy. I tried a secular recovery program, I tried meditating. And all of this time I was just trying to fix whatever was wrong with me so that I could drink like a normal person. That was my goal. I couldn't admit that I was an alcoholic. And that was kind of like where I was for a long time. What finally got me to AA was a lot of things that got me to AA. One of them was that my dad got sober using AA. And after seeing him being an alcoholic my whole life, I thought, you know, if it can work for him, then maybe it can work for me. I also had people start actually, instead of just passively avoiding me, actively confronting me and telling me that, you know, I wasn't, that I had a problem, and that I had one person tell me that, like, I wasn't the kind of person they would want to associate with in their life. And that kind of, like, played into the fear that I had that people would see the difference between what I wanted them to think about me and who I actually was. And I also started doing a lot of like solo drinking at that time. So I came to AA in the pandemic after that terrible hangover where someone told me that I was not the kind of person they would want to associate with in their life. And it was in May, which was the primary purpose of AA, is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And that really gave me a lot of hope, because I felt so much shame and hatred for myself. And AA gave me the hope that I could take the darkest and most painful experiences that I have in my life and turn them into something that can help other people. And that was like kind of the only thing that made it feel like maybe it would be, I could stop feeling so bad about it. And it was also like really great and liberating, and to not feel isolated anymore and be able to kind of acknowledge everything that I had, you know, experienced. Since then, I don't know how I'm different now. I mean, I started going to meetings. I think I did the 90 and 90 when I started. I got a sponsor. I started exchanging gratitude lists with people. And now it's kind of happened slowly over time, but, you know, I think I'm happier. I'm a better friend. I'm a better family member. And what I try to acknowledge now are things that I control and things that I can't control. And the Serenity Prayer is super helpful for me. The best part about it is that I never have to wake up and regret things that I don't remember anymore. That's been the best part for me so far. And that's pretty much my story in a nutshell. Thanks.
Woohoo! Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
Woohoo! Pass the basket. In accordance with our seventh tradition, which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, we have no dues or meeting expenses, including podcast and Zoom fees. We are responsible for our own meeting expenses. You can contribute through Venmo, through the Venmo app. Look for the code in the chat now. And also, we have it up on the screen here. I'll type that in the chat as well. Yes, I will do that. Now I would like to turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Pedro, who will share his experience, strength, and hope with us until 8:55 or until he's done talking. Take it away, Pedro.
Hi, I'm Pedro, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you, Kat, for asking me to come and share tonight. I really appreciate the opportunity to be of service and practice a 12-step and to try to carry the message to other alcoholics. Thank you for giving me something to look forward to today and for the opportunity to stay sober another day by practicing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you would have told me that a little over 3.5 years ago that I would be looking forward to sitting in a meeting of alcoholics and telling my story at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, I probably would have thrown a few expletives your way, gone out, got drunk, woken up and not remembered anything. I probably would have resented you for implying that I had a drinking problem. And if you would have told me that a little more than 3.5 years ago, I would have a sponsor that I work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with, that I have a sponsee that I help to try to work through the steps with, that I have a fellowship of friends and I would say colleagues that I love and I care about. If you would have told me that I have a life beyond my wildest dreams, that even during a global pandemic, I am serene, at peace, calm, almost thriving. If you would have told me any of that stuff 3.5 years ago, I would have called you a liar because I could not believe it myself. I could not 3.5 years ago imagine a life without alcohol. I didn't think life without alcohol was possible, even though I knew 3.5 years ago that I had a drinking problem. Even though I knew that I had to stop drinking or I was either going to die and, that was really my only option at that time. I knew if I didn't stop drinking, I was going to die. I was going to lose everything that was important to me. And at that point, it didn't matter to me anymore. So I am truly grateful to be an alcoholic today. When I first heard people saying that in the rooms, I didn't believe them. I didn't understand them. I thought it was just lip service. That was phony. That was fake. But I get it now. Life is good because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am very grateful for this opportunity and to be an alcoholic in recovery. So, for me, I grew up, my memories of childhood are happy, careless, and free. Grew up in a very poor family, but I didn't know it. Both of my parents were hard to raise us. I was the firstborn in five children, Hispanic, first one of this generation to be here. And from the get-go, my family said, Pete, you're going to be the smart one. You're going to go to college. You're going to be the one who makes it, that takes our family to the next level. And I certainly try to live up to that with that kind of support. I excelled at school. I love school. I love going to school. I enjoyed being with my friends. I was very social, very funny kid. I was a class clown. And, I went through school. I went to high school and I worked really hard, got good grades, and I got accepted to a really good university. Didn't have any problems with drugs or alcohol. Even though I grew up around alcohol in my family, alcohol is kind of celebrated. It's kind of the way you prove your manhood in certain respects, like quinceañeras and weddings and parties. There's always alcohol, kegs, tequila, and I remember all the men in my family would gather around the keg and the bar, and everyone would drink, and sometimes there were fist fights and lots of hugs the next day. I just grew up around alcohol. I saw my dad drinking a lot. I saw him going out on weekends getting drunk. I was certainly experienced some quote unquote discipline that I thought was unjust, some physical abuse, but generally, you know, I didn't think alcohol was a big thing because I just grew up with it. And so I graduated from high school, and that summer I was involved in a musical at a community college, and I started, you know, experimenting with drinking. I started smoking, and started doing crank, and started doing all kinds of stuff. And it didn't take very long for me to really just get deep into all of that stuff. That summer, I had no off button. And looking back, that was definitely a character defect of mine. I just did not have the ability to stop at anything. I've always had problems with food, always been overweight. The relationships I had were just these huge, dramatic, you know, end of life, you're my love for the rest of my life. And, you know, everything was just 110% for me, whether it was food, relationships, even school, now that I look back at it. So when I started drinking in college, I joined a fraternity, and man, it really just 0 to 60 in just overnight, it seemed. I had no off button. I could just binge drink and drink. And that's how my drinking was pretty much my entire collegiate career. I went from being a straight A student to flunking every single class in 2 semesters. Mind you, I worked my butt off to get into a major university. And here I was after the first year being told I needed to take time off because I was on academic probation. That's how quickly alcohol took over my life. Nothing mattered but drinking and partying. And so I took some time off. I kind of chalked it up to just being, you know, the college experience. That's what you did. I got back to college and I was able to squeak by, but I really had to work hard not to drink. So I graduated from college. I ended up going to grad school, and I got into really good grad school. But even then, I just was always drinking. Alcohol was just always there. I always felt like a fake and a phony, because I could get away with things when I was hungover. I could show up to class and fake my way and bullshit my way through classes. And I ended up getting good grades, but I knew deep down inside I was full of crap. I knew that I wasn't living up to my full potential. And in the back of my mind, I knew that I was letting down my family and letting myself down. But I didn't think I had a problem back then. Yeah, maybe I drank too much. Maybe I partied too much. Maybe I said a few things that I regretted the next day. But in general, you know, didn't everybody do that? Doesn't everybody do that? Doesn't everybody, you know, get in fights with their girlfriend? Or doesn't everybody show up hungover to work? I thought that was normal. So let's fast forward a little bit. Graduate city to pursue my dream of being an operatic singer. I'm a performer part-time. I say that I'm a designer, web designer by day and an opera singer by night. That's kind of the way my life turned out. And so I went to New York to pursue my dream, and I spent 2 years smoking crack, drinking in the scariest, seediest places in New York City that I could never have imagined I'd find myself in. Left to my own devices, that's where I went. You know, I quickly lost the path that I was on to pursue my dream. And, you know, I basically had to leave New York City, because if I didn't, I was just going, I got arrested. I spent the night in jail. Some of my closest friends were people that made a living in the drug trade. You know, I was hanging out with seedy types, a far cry from where I thought I would have ended up. So thankfully, I did, for some reason, kind of just grow up a little bit. I ended up getting married, meeting a gal. We moved back to California. She kind of kept me straight. I had something important that I wanted to try to do the right thing and move back to California. She got a job. I decided I wanted to start my own business, right? So I was working from home, and I was drinking all day long while my wife was going to work and paying the bills. And, you know, I've had the excuse of, well, you know, it takes time to start a business, you know, and it's going to take some time. It's going to take a couple of years. But, you know, was I really working? Was I really living up to my potential? No, I was day drinking. And so, you know, needless to say, that marriage didn't last very long, and we got divorced. But I moved on from that. I had huge resentment. How could she do this to me? She don't understand. And I just continued life, and drinking. I got jobs. I was able to perform. I was able to do things that I thought I enjoyed. My business did start growing, and I was singing a lot and having opportunities to travel and perform some really awesome musical theater and opera. And I thought I was the shit, you know. I thought I was well on my way, and I certainly enjoyed it. And I guess what I'm saying is, for a while, alcohol worked, or at least it didn't get to the point where it got to much later. I was able to maintain a life and just kind of be a functioning alcoholic, even though I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I just drank too much sometimes. That was me. I would just say, I just drank too much. That's all. I didn't think I had a problem. So let's fast forward a couple decades of that kind of week to week. You know, I'd have a gig on the weekend. I'd go sing, and there's always wine, and I'd drink, and I'd wake up the next day hungover. And Sunday, I'd have a little hair of the dog, and then I'd get back to work on Monday. You know, after a while, things started changing. You know, it wasn't just that I was having a little dog on Sundays. I was drinking on Sundays and Mondays, and then Tuesdays. Maybe I'd take Wednesday off because I was just so physically, that feeling, that raw feeling of just having had alcohol for 5 days straight, heavy drinking. Maybe I'd take a couple days off. But you know, once I started feeling better, I was like, oh yeah, I can have another drink. And then I'd start drinking again, you know, pretty soon Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays. Didn't matter anymore. I was drinking all the time. And it was starting to affect my life. Life was starting to get harder, starting to get unmanageable. You know, I remember I had a gig. I was singing the lead role in Les Mis. And it was a big concert version with a full orchestra, full costumes, big venue up in Santa Rosa. I don't know if you guys know the, what is it that, it doesn't matter. You know, in front of, you know, over 1,000 people. And I knew this performance was coming up. I'd practiced, the performance was going to be on a Wednesday. And for some reason, that Friday before, I thought it would be a good idea to just have a couple of drinks. Next thing you know, I'm staying up all night doing coke, drinking, smoking. I'm a singer, right? I'm smoking, and I'm snorting stuff up my nose, and I'm drinking for 3 or 4 days straight. And I woke up on Monday, and I'd lost my voice. Thankfully, my girlfriend at the time, her dad's a doctor, was able to get me some really, really powerful anti-inflammatories and medication, and I was able to get my voice back just enough to go to the performance and sing through the performance. But here's the thing. Even though physically, vocally, I was able to perform, mentally, I was so fried that right in the middle of the most iconic song in the whole friggin' musical, I blanked out and I forgot the words. And what seemed like an eternity, I was standing there in front of 1,000 people, sweating. I was able to get through it. I was able to fake it, again, faking it. And after the performance, you know, people were coming up, oh, you were great. You sounded great. And I said, did you notice? And they said, no, we didn't notice. But here's the thing. I knew inside that I was full of shit. I was a failure. I was a phony. You think that would have been enough for me to say I have a problem? And I did think that for a little while. But you know what happened? I got over it. And I kept drinking for another 2 years. Similar situations, same kinds of things would happen. About 3 years ago, there was a big fire in Santa Rosa, and I was living in Santa Rosa. And I was just looking at time. Okay. and here's the thing. I talk about the alcoholic mind. I had found a girlfriend who was a winemaker in Santa Rosa, who was living on a vineyard. I was living in her house. I was living the big wine life. You know, everything was great. And here we are in the vineyard, and we're witnessing Santa Rosa burning to the ground. And what do? We open up wine and champagne. And we were just kind of like, wow, this is kind of cool. And here, I'd always thought of myself, this is really funny, I always thought of myself that if push came to shove, if I was in a situation where I had to be responsible and play the hero, that I could step up, you know, and do the right thing. I was so drunk for like 3 weeks that I even burned myself during the fires. And that's just pathetic. I just gotten pathetic, man. I couldn't talk half the time. It's to the point where I would get up in the morning and have my breakfast beer in the shower, you know, and by 12 o'clock, I'd have a couple more beers, and then I'd be like, well, shit, I'm already buzzed. Might as well just anything I had to do that day, I'd say, well, there's always tomorrow. And I just drink. And by 7 or 8 o'clock at night, I was so freaking drunk. The only thing that could make me go to sleep was to chug alcohol until I passed out. And then I'd wake up in the middle of the night with cold sweats, shaking, dry heaving. And the only thing that I could do was to reach over for the plastic bottle of warm vodka that I had by my bedside and chug it so that it would stop shaking for an hour, just enough to get to sleep. And this was day in and day out. I still didn't think I was an alcoholic. I certainly thought, okay, maybe I have a drinking problem right now, but I thought I could handle it. I didn't think that I was an alcoholic because, you know, alcoholics, they don't live on vineyards. They don't drive Teslas. They don't have singing careers. They don't have all this stuff that I thought I had that made me not be an alcoholic, right? Because I still thought my life was manageable. But I was drinking all the time. And so luckily for me, I got an ultimatum. And I still had enough sense to say, okay, I don't want to lose the things that I have. And I said, okay, I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to take some time off. And just prove to myself that it's just a question of willpower and lack of will. So I did stop. I stopped cold turkey for a month. And during that month, things were good. And singing better, and life was getting better. My relationship was getting better. And then what happened is I went to a wedding, and I was asked to sing at the wedding. And after we sang, that we did a champagne toast for the bride and groom, and someone put a glass of champagne in my hand, and I didn't even think about it. You know, my only thought was, oh, I better drink this because otherwise I'll be rude, and I don't want to be rude. You know, and I remember this clear as day, this glass of champagne in my hand, and taking that first sip, and just immediately I felt a change in me again. And before I even finished drinking that first glass of champagne, I was already looking for the bar where I knew that one glass of champagne turned into one or two bottles, more wine, more Coke. And that set me off on a 2.5 month binge that ended with me finally admitting that I had a problem with alcohol, that I couldn't stop on my own, and that I needed help. And what happened, my moment of clarity was a Halloween, and I had promised, like I always did when I'm drunk, to, you know, let's make costumes and let's go out and have a great Halloween. You know, I say all this stuff when I'm drunk, you know, make all these great plans when I'm drunk. And then I wake up the next day and I'm so freaking hungover. I don't want to do anything. And my girlfriend at the time, her daughter, that we were going to go trick-or-treating. And I was so drunk. And this was like 2 p.m. I was already so drunk. And my heart just broke. It just broke because I couldn't even talk. And I remember saying out loud to my girlfriend, I need help. I'm sick. I think I'm sick and I need help. And that was the first time I was really, truly honest about my alcoholism. So I heard about AA, and I got the phone number for the hotline, and I called the hotline because I still was bulking at meeting. I was scared. I was full of regret and shame and remorse, and I thought I was a big piece of shit. You know, I just did not love myself anymore. I got to the point where I didn't care if I'd lived or not. I was driving drunk on purpose. Tempting fate, saying, so what if they pull me over? I don't fucking care. I'll go to jail. I don't care. What can you do for me? My big plan was to go down to Baja, where my parents live, buy a little taco cart and drink myself to death. That was my big plan at that time. And I just didn't care any. I don't know if anyone here has seen the movie Leaving Las Vegas, but that was going to be my Leaving Las Vegas moment. That's where I wanted to be. I didn't think I had anything to live for anymore. So thankfully I got to, I called the hotline and the lady on there, her voice is still in my head. She was such a loving, caring, understanding person. She knew what I was going through and I didn't even know her. And she convinced me that it was okay to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did. I went to a meeting and I went in with my head down and my tail between my legs. And I sat down and I sobbed. And I cried, and people came up to me after the meeting and put their arms around me and told me I was going to be okay. And they said they understood. And they just encouraged me to come back the next day. And I did. And then they encouraged me to just come 90 and 90. Do more if you have to, but just come every day and we'll be here for you, Pedro. And I did that. And then a gentleman came up to me and said, hey, you know what? If you're interested, I would love to sit down with you once a week and read through the big book and go through the steps. And we did that. He sat me down. We talked and we read. And I explained to him what I was going through. And he understood. He understood what I was going through. And we got to a chapter in the big book. We got to a step. I asked him questions about it. And I balked at a lot of it. I questioned it. But he was patient with me and said, you know, just keep going, you know? So I, reading the big book, I came to understand what alcoholism is. I didn't know what alcoholism was. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I came to find out that I have, like it says in the doctor's opinion, I have an allergy to alcohol. And an allergy is just simply an abnormal reaction to something. Just like I have an abnormal reaction to pollen or certain foods. It's just the way my body is. When I drink alcohol, something in me immediately sets off this craving, which is incredibly powerful. And I might be able to resist that craving for a little bit, but 9 times out of 10, I couldn't. And I didn't understand why. I didn't understand why I couldn't just have one drink. And so we kept reading, and I found out that I had a condition of the mind and the soul that prevented me. It made me helpless against having that first drink or having more drinks, you know? And I came to understand that what I had, I also had a disease of the way I was thinking about life, the way I was interpreting the world around it and where I fit in. So we started looking at some of these beliefs and some of these things that were going on in my head that were affecting my heart. And we took this, you know, we got to step three, and I didn't believe in God. I thought God was not for me. I thought I was an atheist or something, but you know, he'd said, you know, it's okay. You don't have to, you just, got to believe that there's something greater than you that can help you. And I was willing to take that step. And then, you know, I looked at myself and I looked at my resentments and my fears and my behavior. And I got to understand that the reason I was drinking was because I had stinking thinking and I was thinking about things the wrong way. And so I was able to work those things through with a sponsor, and I was able to talk to this man who guided me to get the courage to clean up the wreckage in my life. I had a lot of amends to make, and I got the courage because I understood that I had a part to play in everything I did. So I went out and I asked God for help, and I made some amends, and wouldn't you know it, about halfway through making my amends, a lot of things started happening in my life. You know, I knew a new freedom, a new peace. I didn't regret the past. That my experience could be helpful to others. I intuitively knew how to handle situations which just used to baffle. Life started getting better. And I kept working the steps. And I found a sponsee, and as I worked with him, my program started getting stronger, and I was able to stay sober. I got into service with my fellowship. I started doing the things people asked me to do. I started saying yes. I started saying yes to life, because now I had something I wanted to live for. I had a family that I didn't know I loved as much as I do now. And, I got to the steps. I got through all the steps, and you know, as a result of working the first 11 steps, I had this spiritual awakening, and I realized that it was now incumbent on me to go out into the world and share what I have learned with other people who suffered like me, just like that woman on the phone, just like the sponsor, just like everybody in the room who gave me so freely of their knowledge and their love. They didn't ask for anything in return. The only thing they asked is that I keep coming back. And I did. And so what it's like today is, you know, when I said I didn't believe in God, I didn't realize that God was working in my life, and I didn't even know it. When I first came into the program, I had what I came to find out was this gift of desperation. G-O-D, you know, that was enough to get me into the rooms. I didn't know that was God. And as I got into the program, I met this group of drunks. It's another G-O-D. And they pulled me in and encouraged me. And they gave me good, orderly direction. Another G-O-D. So God's been with me since the beginning, and I just didn't know it. And as a result of working these steps, I've come to believe in a higher power. I've come to believe that a higher power could restore me to sanity. Because what was missing when I first came in, physically I was broken, emotionally I was destroyed, mentally I was just completely nuts. And this spirit that I've come to believe and trust in is what pulled me all together. It's like the glue that took all these broken pieces. And now I believe in God. And, you know, today I practiced as much as possible gratitude on demand. That is my big G-O-D these days. If I can be grateful for one thing, I can stay out of my own head, my own self-pity. I can be grateful for what I have and not compare myself to other people and have resentments. I can go out into the world now because I have a relationship with the world now. I have a spirit that has shown me a path that I can be a part of this world. And so that to me was my spiritual awakening. We talk about in the program having a shift, a conscious shift. And for me, what that means is that before I came to AAA, I didn't think I had anything worth living for. I didn't see that I had things in life. What I thought I had material stuff, you know. And now, it's not that the program is giving me, and sobriety is giving me such a great, so much more abundance than I ever had before. What it's done is that I've had a shift in perspective where now it's like all of a sudden things come in focus, and all the things that are important to life, I can see now. My parents always loved me, but I didn't see it before. I had a good life, but I didn't see it before. I had wonderful brothers and sisters, but I didn't see that before. I had great relationships with people. I didn't see that before. I see it now, and that's been the shift. All these things that I was blind to, I now see, and it's like new. So that's why I feel like I have abundance now, because I see these things. That's been my shift. But my relationship to the world has changed because of this program. And that is as a result of having worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor who guided me through the 12 steps of being of service and just following this simple program. So if you asked me 3.5 years ago that I would be sitting here in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, truly grateful for being an alcoholic, like I said, I would have thought you were crazy. I can't imagine what life would be like right now without Alcoholics Anonymous, nor do I want to imagine it. The problem has been taken away. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted to stop drinking, and I didn't know how. I knew I had to stop drinking, but I didn't know how. I tried to stop drinking, but I couldn't on my own. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they showed me how to stop drinking. But I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous because they gave me so much more. So now it's not, you know, the problem has been removed. I don't really think about alcohol all that much, which is ironic because as a graphics designer, I design labels for wine companies, and I'm always looking at wine. It's just a liquid to me now, you know. I don't miss it. I don't crave it. I'm far enough removed from my last drink that I still, you know, I keep my eyes down the road in the looking forward down the road. And occasionally I'll check the rearview mirror, just make sure something's not sneaking up on me. But in general, this program's given me the tools to trudge this road of happy destiny. And so the alcohol problem has been removed. But what I realized, and the reason I keep coming back, and the reason I keep practicing the program and reaching out to newcomers and coming to meetings and redoing the steps with my sponsor now and working through the steps with my sponsee, is because I realize that I am not cured of alcoholism. It is a disease that I have. And the only defense I have against that next drink is to keep spiritually fit. I'm only granted a daily reprieve from that first drink if I keep working the program. So I think I'm close to running out of time here. 5 more minutes. Wow, you know what's funny? This is my first meeting where I'm speaking for like 40 minutes. And you can never get me to shut up when it's only 15 minutes, right? I can go on for days. 40 minutes, man, that's a long one. So what I'll say is to, I want to just, without crosstalking, I want to just reach out to our newcomers tonight, or anybody who's feeling new tonight. I know what you're feeling, and I know what you're going through, and I know you probably have questions, and you're scared. I was scared. I was full of shame. I've been there. And as I've been speaking tonight, I've seen a lot of people nodding their heads, which indicates to me that we all kind of share similar stories and we can all understand where we've coming from. And I would just encourage you, just like I was encouraged, to just take it one day at a time. For me in the beginning, that's all I needed to think about, is just one day at a time. Sometimes it was one meeting at a time. When's the next meeting? And wouldn't you know it, that's how it works for me, one day at a time. I still count days. I think I have an app. I like keeping track of my days because it reminds me all of this. I earned it. I worked the program. This is a program of action. You know, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. That's all you need to get into the doors of AA. But if you want to stay sober, you got to work and you got to follow the steps and you got to get into the book, get into literature. It is the reason, you know, the 9-step promises start with, if we are painstaking, and it ends with, if we work for it. We have to work this AA muscle to stay sober. And all it asks is for willingness and honesty and acceptance. Accepting step one from when I get up in the morning and I say a prayer, I just ask God just to show me how I can be of service. That's all. That's all I ask for. And usually the opportunities come up. I ask for strength and courage. My favorite prayer is the serenity prayer. It is the center prayer. The reason I drank a lot was because I was fighting against things that I couldn't control. I didn't have the serenity to accept the things that I can change. And I didn't have the courage to change the things I had. I could. I was full of fear. I didn't have courage. And I certainly didn't have the wisdom and this intuition to know the difference. So I just want to sum up with saying, again, gratitude on demand is what's getting me through this pandemic. I know it's been hard. It's been tough. But in a sense, I guess what I want to say is I feel like I've had this hand on my shoulder guiding me in the right direction since this whole thing started, and I don't fear the future anymore. I know that because experience has shown me in sobriety that no matter what is in front of me, if I can stay true to my higher power, I may not like what I'm feeling, but I can sit in that feeling until the solution comes. I don't need to react to, I don't need to chase every stick that's thrown my way. I've learned that my first thought is usually the wrong one, and I don't need to react. I can respond now in appropriate measure because of this program. And because of that, I'm able to make better decisions about life on a day-to-day basis. And that's how life gets better for me. That's how life got better for me. Just one day at a time, doing the next right thing. Encourage anyone who's feeling you and you hear all kinds of stuff, you know, just keep coming back because this program works if you work it. And that's all I'm going to say tonight. So thanks again, Kat, for letting me be of service tonight.